Chapter 14. A Tale of Two Queens. Tiffany took Nightshade, a very small, pathetic creature right now, back to her father's farm with her, tucking her under her cloak for the journey, and then settling her and the Feagles into one of the old-fashioned hay barns. "It's clean and warm here," she said, "with no metal, and I will bring you some food." She looked sternly at the Feagles. They had a hungry look to them. There was an elf all by itself. What could they do with it? "Rob, we met Arthur, Big Yan," she said. "I'm just going to get a lotion for Nightshade to help heal her wounds, and I do not want you to touch her while I am gone. Is that clear?" "Oh, aye, mistress," said Rob cheerfully. "Get yourself off, Ski, and leave yon scunner wi' us." He glared at Nightshade. "If yon elf gies any trouble, ye ken, we have your weapons." He shook his claymore in a fashion that clearly showed that he was itching to take it out to play. Tiffany turned back to Nightshade. "I am the Hag of the Hills," she said, "and these Feagles will do my bidding. But they do not like you and your kind, so I suggest you mend your manners, madam, and play the game, or there will be a reckoning." And then, indeed, she was off-ski. But it was a very rapid off-ski, as she trusted the elf very little and the Feagles even less. When Tiffany got back, Nightshade took the healing ointment, and it seemed as if with each smooth stroke the little elf blossomed, becoming more and more beautiful. There was a sparkle about her, and it was like a syrup that covered everything. It shouted, "Am I not beautiful? Am I not clever? I am the Queen of Queens." Then it seemed to Tiffany that her sense of self was being changed, but she had been waiting for it, and she thought, "I'm not having that, my friend." She said, "You will not try your elvish wiles on me, madam." But still she felt the elves' magic reaching out for her like the creep of a sunrise. She screamed, "You will not put your glamour on me, elf!" And the words of the shepherd's count that Granny Aching had used were in her mind. "Yan, tan, tethera," she chanted, over and over, the singing of the words helping her mind become her own again. It worked. Nightshade began to tone herself down, and now she looked like a farm girl. A dairymaid. She had conjured up a dairymaid's dress for herself, though one that no real dairymaid would ever wear, given that it was adorned with little ribbons and bows, a dainty little slipper-clad foot peeking out from beneath the hem. As a pretty straw bonnet took shape, Tiffany recoiled. The elf had summoned up an echo of the costume she knew very well, one worn by a China shepherdess she had once given to her granny. And as she remembered Granny Aching, she became incredibly angry. How dare this elf try this on her, here, on her very turf? "I demand," Nightshade tried, and then she saw Tiffany's expression. "I would hope." "A country girl. The elvish has begun to leave the building," Tiffany thought with delight. But she still folded her arms and glared at the elf. "I've helped you," she said, "but I am also busy helping other people, people who would have a better life if you weren't here." She narrowed her eyes. "Especially if your people cause mischief. Do things like spoiling our beer. Yes, I know about that, and I know you, elf, and I know what you want. You want your kingdom back, don't you, Nightshade?" There was a growl from the assembled Feagles, and Big Yan said hopefully, "Can we nae throw it back there, mistress?" "Aye," said Rob, "be rid of yon pest." "Well, Rob," said Tiffany, "I am sorry to tell ye there are some folks who think Feagles are a pest." Big Yan went silent, then said slowly, "Weel, we may be pests, ye ken, but a pure bairn has nae reason to dread Feagles." He rose to his full height of 7 inches. Big Yan was very tall for a Feagle, with the scars on his forehead, typical of the taller-than-average, who can find doorways somewhat challenging, and loomed over the elf from the rafters. Tiffany ignored him, turning back to Nightshade. "Am I right?" she demanded. "You want to return to Fairyland? What do you say?" Cunning flickered across Nightshade's sharp little face. "We are like bees," she said at last. "The queen has all the power until she gets older, and then a new queen kills her to take the hive." A wave of anger was suddenly visible. "Peas blossom," she hissed. "He does not believe that the world has changed. It was he who threw me from my people." A contemptuous sneer crossed her lips. "He, who is so powerful he can spoil beer, when we could once destroy worlds!" "I could give you some help with your little friend Peas Blossom," Tiffany said slowly. "I would settle for you as Queen of the Elves again, if you could make all the elves go back once more to their own land and stay there. But if you and your race should come here for the purpose of making humans your slaves, well, you may think you have seen me angry, but then you will know the real meaning of the word rage." As she said that, everything about her flickered in fire, and she remembered facing the Queen before, land under wave, knowing where she had come from, where she was going, and that she could no longer be fooled, knowing that no matter how many people dreamed, invited elves to come into the world, she would be there, awake, holding firm. "If you break your vow, the last things you will see are thunder and lightning," she threatened. "Thunder and lightning in your head, and you will die of the thunder. That is a promise, elf." From the look of terror that flickered across Nightshade's face, Tiffany knew that the elf understood. She brought Nightshade some porridge in the morning. The elf looked up at Tiffany as she took the bowl and said, "You could have killed me yesterday. I'd have killed me. Why didn't you? You know I am an elf, and we are merciless." "Yes," said Tiffany, "but we are human, and we do know mercy. I also know I'm a witch, and I'm doing my job." "You are clever, Tiffany Aching, the little girl I almost killed on the hill when the thunder and lightning became solid and hurtful, all teeth and bite." Nightshade was puzzled. "What am I now but a ragged pauper? Friendless, but you, one girl, you took me in when you had no reason to." "I did have a reason," said Tiffany. "I'm a witch, and I thought it possible." She sat down on a milk churn and said, "You must understand that elves are seen as vindictive, callous, spiteful, untrustworthy, self-centred, undeserving, unwelcome nuisances. And that's being nice. I've heard much worse language used about them, especially from people whose children have been taken away, I can tell you. But nothing stays the same. Our world, our iron, your court, your glamour. Did you know, Nightshade, that in Ankh-Morpork, goblins have jobs and are considered to be useful members of the community?"
"What?" said the Queen. "Goblins? But you humans hate goblins and their stink. I thought the one we captured was lying."
"Well, maybe they do stink a bit, but so do their masters, because for some of them, a stink is money," said Tiffany. "And a goblin who can repair a locomotive can stink as much as he likes. What do you elves have to offer us? You are just folklore now. You've missed the train, in fact, and you have only mischief left and silly tricks."
"I could kill you with a thought," said Nightshade with a sly look.
"Oh, dear," said Tiffany, holding up a hand to halt the Feagles, each of whom wanted to be the one to get the first fist in. "I hope you don't do so. It would be your last." She looked at the elf, whose sharp little face was quivering with upset as she found herself surrounded by those she did not understand.
"Oh, please don't cry. An elf who has been a queen, an elf who wants to be a queen again, surely shouldn't cry."
"A queen shouldn't, but I am a remnant of a queen lost in the wilderness."
"No, you are in a hay barn. Do you understand the meaning of manual labour, lady?" Nightshade looked puzzled.
"No. What does it mean?"
"It means earning a living by working. How are you with a shovel?"
"I don't know. What is a shovel?"
"Oh, dear," said Tiffany again. "Look, you can stay here until you are better, but you must work hard at something. You could try." A boot bounced off the ground beside her, one of her father's, a hole at the toe, and another trying out of sympathy to join in at the heel.
"I canny abide boots on my feet, ye ken," said wee Mad Arthur. "But if ye recall, I was raised by shoemakers, and they told me a tale of the elves. Yon scunner ye ha' there might ha' a talent for it, ye ken."
Nightshade turned the boot gingerly over in her hands.
"What is this?" she said.
"A boot," said Tiffany.
"And ye'll get one reet new up your backside if I ha' anything to do with it," Big Jan growled.
Tiffany took the boot from the elf and put it down.
"We'll talk later, Nightshade," she said. "Thank you for your suggestion, wee Mad Arthur, and yes, I do know the story."
It had been in the Good Child's Book of Fairy Tales, and told how two little elves secretly helped a poor shoemaker, but sadly experience had taught Tiffany that a lot of what was in that book bore no relation whatsoever to the real fairyland. But I think that it is just that, a story.
"Well, I told you, wee Mad Arthur, you shouldn't have listened to that load of old cobblers," said Rob.
It was a day of old sheets and old boots and make-do and mend. And, oh dear, Tiffany thought she had to check on baby Tiffany, and drop in on Becky Pardon and Nancy Upright. Miss Tick felt that both girls might be of use if she wanted to take on a trainee in the chalk. But she couldn't ask the girls to move in while she had Nightshade at the farm, not unless she gave them each a horseshoe necklace so that they would be protected by the iron. It would have to wait. She was back and forth to the farm all day, in between visits. Her last call of the afternoon was to Mr. Holland, the miller. There were only a few purple blotches on his skin now, and she left Mistress Holland with a second pot of the Merry Day Root Lotion, biting her tongue at the good lady's clear message of, "If only you had been here, I wouldn't have used the wrong herb." When she got back, she found Nightshade perched in the corner of the barn, her merciless eyes pinned on Hugh, who had stalked in and was arching her back and hissing at the elf. The feagles were egging Hugh on with cries of, "Ach, see you, pussycat, gee a scunner, a wee gifty for the knack-mack feagle," interrupted by a sudden, "Crivens, lads, the big wee hag is back." Tiffany stood in the doorway, tapping her foot, and Rob shrank back.
"Ach, no," he wailed. "Nay, the tapping of the feet, mistress."
Tiffany folded her arms.
"Ach, mistress, 'tis a heavy thing to be under a geese," Rob moaned,
and Tiffany laughed. Nightshade had questions for her. She had seen people coming to the farm during the day, coming for medicines, for advice, for an ear to listen, and, sadly, sometimes for an eye to see the bruises.
"Why do you help these strangers?" she asked Tiffany now. "They are not of your clan. You owe them nothing."
"Well," said Tiffany, "although they are strangers, I simply think of them as people, all of them. And you help other people. That's how we do it."
"Does every person do it?" said Nightshade.
"No," said Tiffany. "Sadly, that is true. But many people will help other people just because, well, because they are other people. That's how it goes. Do you elves not understand this?"
"Shall we say that I am trying to learn?" said Nightshade.
"And what do you find?" said Tiffany, smiling.
"You become a kind of servant," Nightshade sniffed, a delicate nose wrinkling.
"Well, yes," said Tiffany, "but it doesn't matter, because one day I might need that person, and then they will very probably help me. It works for us. It always has."
"But you have battles," said Nightshade. "I know that."
"Yes, but not always, and we are getting better at the knot."
"You are powerful, though. You could rule the world," said Nightshade.
"Really?" said Tiffany. "Why should I want to do that? I am a witch. I like being a witch. And I like people, too. For every nasty person, there's a nice one, mostly. There is a saying, what goes around comes around, and it means that sooner or later you'll find yourself on top, at least for a while. And another time, the wheel turns and you will not be on top, but you will have to put up with it." She tried to look into Nightshade's eyes, see what the elf was thinking, but she might as well have looked at a wall. The elves' eyes were emotionless. "And I remember the darkness and the rain and the thunder and lightning," she added. "And what good has it done you? You, elf, found in a ditch." For once, Nightshade seemed at a loss and looked carefully at Tiffany before saying,
"Your way would not work for elves. Every other elf is a challenge. We kill our queens. Every other queen is a rival, and we fight over the hive."
She paused as a new thought struck her.
"Yet you have your queens of wisdom, and thus there was Granny Aching and Granny Weatherwax, and yes, indeed, Tiffany Aching. You grow older, wisdom flourishes and is passed on.
And you never prosper. You live in a cycle of decay," Tiffany said softly, "and you are not bees. They are productive, but they die young and never, ever have a thought." There was a strange look on the elf's face, She was having to think, really think. Tiffany could see it. Nightshade had the face of someone who had already begun to think about a world that had changed, a world with iron that was less welcoming for the fairy folk, a world that liked them well enough in stories but had no real belief in them, gave them no way in. Now she was looking closer, and she was finding a new world she had never thought about before, and she was trying to reconcile it with everything else she knew. And Tiffany could see the battle in her face. Over in Lanka, Queen Magrat had heard about the trouble up in the Ramtops, the attack on the lumberjacks, the deaths and the lost timber. Elves, she thought. They'd seen them off last time, but it hadn't been easy, and it had been a long time since she'd posted guards, well, Sean Ogg anyway, up by the circle of stones known as the Dancers, or made sure the castle had plenty of horseshoes to hand. She knew how the memory plays tricks, and the old stories had power, and everyone forgot how terrific really means brings terror. Her people would only remember that the elves sang beautifully. They would have forgotten what their song was about. Magrat was not only a queen, but also a witch, of course, and although she was mostly a queen these days, the witch part of her knew that the balance was off, that Granny Weatherwax had left a void behind her, and no matter how hard Tiffany Aching was working to fill it, and that nice backhouse boy she now had, Granny Weatherwax was a hard act to follow. She had held the barrier, held it firm. And if the barrier was no longer strong, Magrat shivered. Anyone who had ever met elven kind knew that terror was absolutely the right response, the only response. For the elves were a plague that could spread rapidly, destroying and harming and hurting and poisoning all they touched. She wanted no elves in Lanka. That evening, Queen Magrat went to her guardrobe and took out her beloved broomstick, sat on it and very carefully tried a lift, and, slightly against her expectations, it took off gently, rising slowly over the castle. She flew around happily for some minutes and told herself, "It's true. Once a witch, always a witch." Being a dutiful wife, when she wanted to be, she mentioned her intentions to her husband late that evening. And to her surprise, King Verin said, "Back on the old broomstick, my love. Very glad to hear it. I've seen your face when a witch flies by. No man can keep a bird in chains." Magrat smiled and said, "I don't feel like a bird in a cage, my dear, but now we don't have Granny, I feel I must help." "Well done," said Verence. "We're all coming to terms with what's happening, but I'm sure Mistress Aching will follow in Granny's footsteps."
"It isn't like that," said Queen Magrat. "I think she's walking in her own footsteps."
She sighed. "But there are elves afoot," she said, "and I believe Tiffany will be at Granny's cottage, no, her cottage, later today, so I must go and see her, offer my support." Her husband shivered at the mention of elves. "Of course," Magrat continued firmly, "I also intend to be a good role model for our children. Young Esme is growing up fast, and I want her to see that there's more to being a queen than waving hellos. We don't want her to start kissing frogs now, do we? We all know how that can turn out." Most princesses never try to kiss toads, however, which had been a source of sadness to the Feagles' toad lawyer for many years. She turned at the door and tossed her husband a baby sling. "I am quite sure," she said sweetly, "that you can look after our children very well indeed on your own for a little while." Verence smiled weakly. Magrat made a face that only a witch would see. "He holds them upside down sometimes," she thought to herself. "He's a very clever man. But give him a baby, and he doesn't really know what to do." She smiled. He could learn. And when she asked him to change a nappy, when Millie was off helping in the kitchen, he pulled a face, but he did try anyway. "I want to help," Magrat said firmly to Tiffany, landing her broomstick outside what they both still thought of as Granny's cottage, less than an hour after Tiffany had arrived herself, the news quickly flashing up to the castle since Magrat had made it known she wanted to be informed. "I am the queen, but I am also a pretty good witch." Tiffany looked into Magrat's eyes and saw her longing to be a witch once more, just for a little while. And then Magrat said, "We have had elves here, Tiffany." "Elves?" And Tiffany remembered Granny Weatherwax telling her how Magrat had fought the elves before, shot one right through the eye with a crossbow indeed. "I have experience, Tiffany," Magrat continued, "and you are going to need everyone you can get if the elves start coming through." She paused to think. "Even novices. Have you spoken to Miss Tick?"
"Yes," said Tiffany. "She says she has found one or two likely girls, but not everyone can be a witch, even if they want to be. And at the moment it's not possible to take a girl on in my steading on the chalk."
"Why not? And what about your friend Petulia, her with the piggery?"
"Well, she has the skills," said Tiffany, ignoring the first of Magrat's questions. "But Petulia helps her husband to run the farm, says she spends all her time amongst creatures who go grunt, and that sometimes includes the old pig farmers. And you have to admit that pig boring is good for everybody, even the pigs. It's terrible to hear the squealing if she's not there. Well, we may still need her up here, pigs or not. And heavy waterproof boots can take an arrow," said Magrat. "So, any sign of elves down on the chalk?"
Tiffany coloured, uncertain how Magrat would take her news about Nightshade, but thinking a little guiltily that at least it would save her having to tell Nanny Ogg herself. She told her about the beer first, then about Nightshade, how the elf was staying at her parents' farm, watched over by Feagles, making it impossible to take on any other help. Magrat knew the Feagles would keep the elf from causing any trouble, but she was surprised by what Tiffany told her.
"Are you telling me you think you can trust an elf?" she said. Her face had paled.
"No elf is trustworthy," she added. "They wouldn't even know the meaning of the word.
Yet you trust this elf? Why?"
"No," said Tiffany, "I don't trust her, but I think this elf wants to live. Nightshade has already seen for herself that our world is changing. The iron, you know. And now she has encountered ideas unknown to her. We might just be making some progress, and I think it's worth a try. Perhaps she might then go back to Fairyland and persuade other elves to think like her. To leave us alone." She paused.
"The Kelder of the Feagles warned me, Magrat. She said that Granny's going would leave a hole, that we needed to take great care. It's the elves. It has to be. So if this elf can help, well, I must try."
"Hmm. But if those others do start coming, you're going to need help, Tiffany," said Magrat. She thought for a moment.
"I understand the Baron on the Chalk has a wife who is a witch."
"Yes," said Tiffany, "Letitia Keepsake. But she's not trained, and her husband is a bit, how should I say it, snobby."
Magrat said, "Well, my dear, if you want, I'll fly down there and drop in for tea one day, and hint, in a subtle way, that the idea of being a witch for the people at large might be a good idea. My Verence, you know, likes to be thought of as a king of the people, and in fact, I feel sure he thinks I'm being a good example to the population by working as a witch now. He talks like that sometimes, but I love him nevertheless. The idea of this Letitia being friends with the Queen might stop her husband interfering."
Tiffany said, "I am amazed. Just like that."
"Trust me," said Queen Magrat. "Crowns are important, you know."
Tiffany flew back to the chalk feeling a bit happier. Magrat would be a useful ally, and perhaps Letitia would be able to help too. But we are still short of witches, so we must take pains to get more, she thought. Furious pains. That means pulling in every witch and likely witch to learn at least some of the craft and how to deal with the glamour of elves.
Elves.
Nastiness for the sake of being nasty. As Granny Aching had told her, they would take away the stick of a man with no legs. Nasty, unpleasant, stupid, annoying. Trouble and discord just for the pleasure of it. Worse, they brought actual horror and terror and pain. And they laughed, which was bad enough because their laughter was actually musical, and you could wonder why such wonderful music could come from such unpleasant creatures. They cared for nobody except themselves, and possibly not even that. But Nightshade. Perhaps there was one elf for whom the wheel was turning. Especially the iron wheels.
Chapter 15. The God in the Barrow. In the dark of the night, down in the chalk, the wheel was definitely stuck in the old ways, just the way three elves dancing through the gloom of the woods liked it. This world was here for their pleasure, to entertain them, delight them. And the creatures within it were no more than toys, toys that sometimes squealed and ran and shrieked
as the elves laughed and sang. Now they spotted a small home, a poor-looking dwelling with a window slightly ajar. From within came the sound of babies, gurgling happily in their sleep, their bellies full of their mother's milk, their limbs curled beneath the covers of their cots. The elves grinned at each other and licked their lips in anticipation. Babies! Faces now at the window, predatory faces with the eyes of hunters. Then a hand reached in and tickled the nearest infant under the chin, the little girl waking and gazing in delight at the glorious creature leaning over her, his glamour shining radiantly in the dark room, her little fingers stretched out to touch a beautiful feather. Tiffany's happiness lasted until just after she had gone to bed, when there was a sudden tickling in her head, and in her inner eye she saw young Tiffany Robinson, the baby she had not had time to see yet this week, the little girl on whom she had placed a tracking spell. But this was not just neglect by baby Tiffany's mum and dad. The elves had taken her. Tiffany's broomstick could not go fast enough. In a piece of woodland she found a group of three elves toying with the little girl, and what was inside her was not anger. It was something more forensic than that. And as the stick went onwards, Tiffany let her feelings flame up and release. The elves were laughing, but as Tiffany swooped down, she sent fire blazing from her fingertips and into them and watched them burn. She was shuddering with her fury, a fury so intense it was threatening to overcome her. If she met any more elves that night, they too would be dead. And she had to stop herself there, suddenly appalled at what she had done. "Only a witch gone to the dark would kill," she screamed at herself inside her head. And another voice said, "But they were just elves, and they were hurting the baby." The first voice came sneakily back with, "But Nightshade is also just an elf." And Tiffany knew that if a witch started thinking of anyone as just anything, that would be the first step on a well-worn path that could lead to, oh, to poisoned apples, spinning wheels, and a too small stove, and to pain, and terror, and horror, and the darkness. But it was done, and a witch had to be practical. So Tiffany wrapped her shawl around the baby and slowly flew to the Robinsons' house. Shack being, in fact, a better word for the little dwelling. Young Mr. Robinson opened the door to her knocking. He looked surprised, especially when Tiffany showed him his baby daughter, swaddled in her witch's shawl. She walked past him and confronted his wife, thinking, "They are young, yes, but that doesn't mean you have to be stupid. Leaving the windows open at this time of year, surely everybody knows about elves." "My mother said I never should play with the fairies in the wood." "Well," said Millie, "I checked the boys. They seem to be all right." She blushed as Tiffany handed her the baby, and Tiffany caught it. "Let me tell you something, Millie. Your girl has a great future before her. I'm a witch, so I know it. Because you've let me name her, I will see to it that my namesake has what she needs. And mind, it is your girl I am talking about. In some ways, she's partly mine. Those great big boys of yours will look after themselves. Now don't leave your windows open on nights like this. There are always watchers. You know it. Let no harm attend her." Tiffany almost shouted the last bit. This family needed a little prod every so often, and she would see to it. Oh yes, she would. And if they neglected their duty, well, there would be a reckoning. Maybe just a little reckoning to make them understand. But right now, as she headed home, she knew she needed to talk to another witch. She grabbed a warm cloak from her bedroom, then saw the gleam of the shepherd's crown on the shelf, and, on a sudden impulse, tucked it into her pocket. Her fingers curled around the odd-shaped little stone, tracing its five ridges, and somehow she felt a strength flow into her, the hardness of the flint at its heart reminding her who she was. "I need to keep a piece of the chalk with me," she realized. "My land gives me strength, supports me. It reminds me who I am. I am not a killer. I am Tiffany Aching, Witch of the Chalk, and I need my land with me." She sped through the night sky back to Lanka, the cool of the air rushing past, the eyes of the owls watching her in the moonlight. It was almost dawn when she arrived at Nanny Ogg's home. Nanny was already up, or rather she hadn't yet got down, since she had spent the night at a deathbed. She opened her door and blanched a little when she saw Tiffany's face. "Elves?" she asked grimly. "Magrat told me, you know. You've got trouble over in the chalk." Tiffany nodded, any calm deserting her as tears suddenly choked her voice. And over the requisite cup of tea in Nanny's warm kitchen, she told her what had happened. Then she came to the bit of the story which she struggled to get out. All she could say was, "The elves, with little Tiffany, they were going to..." She choked a little, then, "I killed all three of them," she wailed. She looked despairingly at Nanny. "Good," said Nanny. "Well done. Don't trouble yourself, Tiff. If they was hurting that baby, well, what else could you do? You didn't enjoy it?" she asked carefully, eyes shrewd in her wrinkled face. "Of course not," Tiffany cried. "But, Nanny, I just did it almost without thinking." "Well, you might have to do it again soon if the elves keeps on coming," Nanny said briskly. "We're witches, Tiffany. We has the power for a reason. We just has to make sure as it's the right reason. And if there is an elf coming through and hurting a baby, take it from me, that is the right reason." She paused. "If people do the wrong things, well, why would they be surprised if bad things then happen to them? Most of them knows this, you know. I remember Esme telling me once, she was in some hamlet or other, Spickle, Spackle, somewhere like that, and people was trying to string up this man for killing two children, and she said as he knew he deserved it. Apparently he said, 'I did it in liquor, and it ended in emp.'" She sat wearily down, allowing Gribo to clamber onto her ample lap. "Reality, Tiff," she added, "life and death. You knows it." She scratched the tomcat behind what might be described as an ear by someone with very poor eyesight. "Is the child all right?" "Yes, I took her back to her parents, but they won't look after her properly." "Some folk just don't want to see the truth, even when you point it out to them. That's the trouble with elves. They will keep coming back." Nanny sighed heavily. "People tell stories about them, Tiff," she said. "They make them sound fun. It's as if their glamour hangs around after they've gone and stays in people's heads, telling them that elves is no problem. Just a bit of mischief." Nanny sank further into her chair, knocking a small family knick-knack off the table beside her. "Feagles," she said. "They're mischief. But elves? Elves is different. You remember how the cunning man crept into people's heads, Tiff? How he made people do things? Awful things?" Tiffany nodded, her mind replaying horrible images while her eyes still focused on the knick-knack on the floor. A present from Quirm, from one of her daughters-in-law, and Nanny hadn't even noticed she had knocked it over. Nanny, who treasured every small object her family gave her, who would never, ever fail to notice if something was damaged. "Well, that's nothing to what them elves might do, Tiff," Nanny continued. "There is nothing they likes more than watching pain and terror, nothing that makes them laugh more, and they love stealing babbies. You did well to stop them this time. They will come again, though." "Well, then they will have to die again," said Tiffany flatly. "If you are there," Nanny said carefully. Tiffany slumped. "But what else can we do? We can't be everywhere." "Well," said Nanny, "we've seen him off before. It was hard, for sure, but we can do it again. Can't that elf of yourn help?" "Nightshade," Tiffany said. "They won't listen to her the way things are right now. They threw her out." Nanny pondered a bit, then appeared to come to a decision. "There is someone they might listen to, or at least they used to listen to him, if he can be persuaded to take an interest." She looked at Tiffany appraisingly. "He don't like to be disturbed, though I have visited him before, once, with a friend." Her eyes grew misty at the memory. Nanny's friend on that occasion had been Count Casanunda, the lowwayman, a highwayman who carried a stepladder on his horse on account of his being a dwarf, and was most gallant towards the ladies he encountered. "And I think Granny and he may have had words in the past. He likes ladies, though. A pretty young thing like you might be just his cup of tea." Tiffany bristled. "Nanny, you can't be suggesting. Lordy, no. Nothing like that. Just a bit of persuading. You are good at persuading folks, ain't you, Tiff?" "I can do persuading," Tiffany said, relaxing a bit. "Who do you mean, and where do I go?" The Long Man. Tiffany had heard a lot about the Long Man, the barrow that led to the home of the King of the Elves, mostly from Nanny Og, who had gone into the barrow and met the King once before, when the Elves had been getting unruly. The professors would have said that the King lived in a long barrow from ancient times, when people didn't wear clothing and there weren't so many gods, and in a way the King himself was a kind of god, a god of life and death, and, it seemed to Tiffany, of dirt and ragged clothing. And men still sometimes came to dance around by the barrow, horns on their heads, and, usually, a strong drink in their hands. Unsurprisingly, they found it hard to persuade young women to go up there with them. There were three mounds to the barrow, three very suggestive mounds that no country lass who had watched sheep and cows in action could fail to recognise. There was always a lot of giggling from the girls training to be witches when they first flew over it and saw it from the air. Tiffany headed up the overgrown path, pushing her way through thorns and trees, untangling her witch's hat from a particularly insistent bush at one point, and stopped by the cave-like entrance. She was strangely reluctant to duck under the lintel, past the scratched drawing of the man with horns, and down the steps she knew she would find once she had pushed aside the stone at the entrance. "I cannot face him just by myself," she thought with terror. "I need someone who can at least tell people how I died." And a wee voice said, "Crivens! Rob anybody? Ooh, aye. We follow ye all the time, ye ken. Ye are the Hag of the Hills, and a long man is a big hill." "But wait by the gate, please, Rob. I must do this by myself," she said, suddenly filled with sureness that this was the right choice. She had killed the three elves. Now she would face their king. "This is hag business, ye ken." "But we knows the king," said Rob. "If and we gae along wi' ye, we can fight yon scunner in his ain world."
"Ooh, aye," added wee dangerous Spike. "A big laddie, ye ken, but I'll gie the boogle a fistful of feagle he'll nae forget."
He experimentally nutted one of the entrance stones, bouncing his head off the rock with a satisfying clunk. Tiffany sighed. "That's what I'm afraid of," she said. "I want to ask the king for his help, not anger him. And I know the Feagles have history with him."
"Aye, that's us," said Rob proudly. "We is history."
"Nay, king, nay, queen, nay, laird,"
roared the assembled Feagles.
"Nay, Feagles," said Tiffany firmly.
A sudden burst of inspiration hit her. "I need you just here, Rob anybody," she told him. "I have to do my hag business with the king without anyone disturbing me." She paused. "And there are elves afoot. So if any should come seeking their king, I want you, Rob, anybody, we, Dangerous Spike, all of ye, to stop them coming down after me. I need you to do this for me. It's important. Is that understood?" There was a bit of grumbling, but Rob had brightened up.
"So we can give 'em scunners a good kicking if they shows up here?" he asked.
"Yes," Tiffany said wearily. This was met by a cheer.
"Knack, mack, feagle, wahey!"
She left them there, squabbling over who should guard which part of the Long Man, wee Dangerous Spike bashing his head enthusiastically against the entrance stones again as a sort of warm-up for what he hoped was coming. And she walked into the stinky darkness, clutching the small crowbar she had brought with her along with a horseshoe. She put one hand into her pocket and held tight onto the shepherd's crown, her ground. Her turf. "Let's see if I am truly the Hag of the Hills," she thought, and she gripped the big stone blocking the entrance. It rose up gently, no crowbar necessary, the stone crackling as she raised it higher and higher, revealing the steps beyond. The path inside led her deeper and darker, spiralling round and round, taking her into the heart of the barrow, into a pathway between the worlds. Into the world of the Elven King, where he floated between time and space in his land of pleasure. It was stifling, though there was no fire. The heat seemed to be coming out of the earth. And it stank. It reeked of masculinity and unwashed clothing, of feet and sweat. There were bottles everywhere, and at the end of the hall, naked men were wrestling, grunting and groaning as they twined and twisted with their opponents, their bodies greased as if from a bucket of lard. There were no women to be seen. This was a land where men indulged themselves with no thought for the other sex. But when they saw Tiffany, They stopped and put their hands over their essentials, as Nanny would have said, and Tiffany thought, "You big, strong men, your meat and two veg hanging out. You're frightened, aren't you? I am the maiden, and I am also the hag." She could see the king of the elven races. He was just as Nanny Ogg had described, still stinking, of course, but somehow hugely attractive. She kept her eyes on the horns on his head, trying not to look at his meat and veg, which were huge. The king sighed, stretching out his legs and tapping his hooves against the wall, an animal scent like that of a badger in heat, rising from him and curling towards her. "You, young woman," he said lazily, his voice an invitation to romance, to wickedness, to pleasures you had not known you wanted until that moment. "You come into my world, into my entertainments. You are a witch, are you not?"
"Indeed I am," said Tiffany, "and I am here to ask the King of the Elves to be a proper king."
He moved closer, and Tiffany tried not to blanch as the stench of him thickened. He smiled lasciviously, causing her to think, "I know who you are and what you are, and I think Nanny Ogg must have liked you."
"Who are you?" he queried. "By your garb you seem indeed to be a witch, but witches are old and somewhat wrinkled. You, girl."
"Sometimes," Tiffany thought, "I am so fed up with being young," a thought that she would most certainly grow out of, assuming she survived long enough. "My youth has got his attention, but what I need is his respect. I may be young, my lord," she said firmly, "but as you see, I am a witch, and I come to tell you that I have killed three of your people." That should do it, she thought, but the king merely laughed.
"You interest me, my girl," he said, stretching languorously. "I do no harm," he added lazily. "I simply dream, but my people, oh dear, what can I do? I must allow them their delights as I do myself."
"But their delights are not to our taste," said Tiffany, "not in my world."
"My world," chuckled the king. "Oh, you have pride, little girl. Perhaps you would like to be one of my ladies. A queen needs pride."
"The Lady Nightshade is your queen," said Tiffany firmly, her legs shaking at the invitation in the king's words. "To stay here? With him?" her mind shrieked. She gripped the shepherd's crown more firmly. "I am Tiffany Aching of the Chalk," she said to herself, "and I have flint in my soul. Nightshade is my guest," she added. "Perhaps you did not know, my lord, that your queen has been thrown from Fairyland by the Lord Peasblossom?" A lazy smile spread across the king's face.
"Nightshade," he mused. "Well, I hope you enjoy her company."
He spread his legs, making Tiffany gulp, and leaned forward.
"You begin to tire me now, girl. What do you want from me?"
"Get your elves to see sense," said Tiffany, "or there will be a reckoning." Her voice almost wobbled on the last bit of this, but it had to be said, oh yes. There was a huge sigh, and the king yawned as he lay back again.
"You come to my abode, and you threaten me," his voice caressed. "Tell me, mistress, what care should I have for those elves who play in your lands? Even the Lady Nightshade. There are other worlds. There are always other worlds."
"Well, mine never was a place for elves," Tiffany said. "It was never yours. You just latched onto it, a parasite, and took what you could. But once again, I have to tell you, these are the days of iron. Not just horseshoes, but iron and steel, forged together in great lines across the land. It's called a railway, my lord, and it is spreading across the disk. People are interested in mechanical things, because mechanical things work, while old wives' tales mostly just don't kill them. And so people laugh at the fairies, and as they laugh, so you will dwindle. You see, nobody cares about you any more. They have the clacks, the railways, and it's a new world. You and your kind have no future here now, other than in stories." She said the last word contemptuously.
"Stories," the king mused. "Away into the minds of your peoples, mistress, and I can wait.
The stories will survive when this railway you speak of is long gone.
But we will not stand by to see small children taken as playthings for elves any more, Tiffany said. I and others will burn those who take them. This is a warning. I would like it to be friendly, but alas, it seems this is not possible. You are living in railway time, and you should leave us be.
The king sighed again. Perhaps, perhaps, he said. New lands to discover could be entertaining, but I have told you. I have no desire to visit your land in this time of iron. After all, I have all the time I wish for.
What about the elves who've already come through?
Oh, just kill them if you wish, the king smiled again. I may remain here until the end of time, and I don't think that you would want to be there. But I have always liked the ladies, and so I will say that if elves are stupid, they deserve my censure and your wrath. My dear Mistress Aching, and yes, I do know who you are. You clasp good intentions to you, like a mother clutches her young. Now, should I even let you leave? When I am looking for entertainment, he sighed. I do so desire new amusements sometimes. Perhaps to tinker with something, to discover new interests. And one new interest could be you. Do you think that I will let you leave my home? His heavy-lidded eyes caressed her.
Tiffany swallowed. Yes, Your Majesty, you will let me leave.
Are you so sure?
Yes. Tiffany wrapped her hand around the shepherd's crown once again and felt the flint at its centre give her strength, draw her back to her own land, to her land above the wave. She stepped backwards slowly, and nearly tripped over something on the floor behind her. The king was staring too. It was a white cat, and she heard the king's voice, surprised, for the first time.
You?
And then there was an end to it, and Tiffany and you spiralled the way back they had come, and the Sveagles were outside, patrolling up and down, and enjoying the happy opportunity of fighting a tree or two, since no elves had turned up. But these trees were still right scunners, sticking their barbs as they did into Fiegel heads and beards. They deserved a good kicking.
Well, I'm not sure that did any good, Tiffany said to Rob as she emerged from the tunnel.
Well, said Rob, anybody, let them come. You will always have your Fiegels. We Fiegels are everlasting.
Everlasting, if there is enough to drink,
we Dangerous Spike added. Rob, said Tiffany firmly, right now, not one of you needs a drink. We need a plan. She thought for a moment. The king will not help, yet. But he is looking for new entertainments. Perhaps if we offer him something of that ilk, then he will think more kindly upon us and at least leave us alone. Leave us to kill his elves, she thought to herself. He did say he wouldn't mind. Would he change his mind?
Ach, nae problem, said Rob proudly, confident of his ability to find a PLN. That king of the elves, he needs something to do, you see.
Like the men of Lanka, Tiffany said suddenly. Rob, you know how Geoffrey has them all building sheds? Well, you built a pub once. How difficult would a shed be?
Nae trouble at all, right, lads, said Rob, happy now, for he had his PLN. Let's offski.
He looked down at you.
How come your pussycat follows you around, mistress?
I don't know, said Tiffany. She's a cat. They can go anywhere. And after all, she was Granny Weatherwax's cat, and that means quite a lot. But Rob wasn't listening. Not now. He was thinking of his PLN. And the following day, at the mouth of the Long Man, there was a shed replete with everything a gentleman could require, including fishing line and every tool you can think of, all made of wood or stone. Tiffany thought that might make the King of the Elves happy, but she did not feel it would get his help. Lord Peaseblossom lounged on a velvet-covered couch in Fairyland, idly fingering the ruff of feathers around his neck, swigging from a goblet of rich wine. Lord Lankin had just entered the chamber.
He bowed before his new king, a glorious red broom of a tail slung casually round his neck, memento of a recent raid.
"I believe, my lord," he said lazily, silkily, "that our warriors will soon wish for greater enjoyments in the human world. The barriers seem weak, and those of us who slip through to hunt are finding no real opposition."
Peaseblossom smiled. He knew that his elves had been testing the gates, some skipping through the red stones of Lanka, whilst others had gambled near the villages of the Chalk, wary only of the little red-haired men who liked nothing more than a fight with an elf. The elves were like the Fegals in one respect. If there was nobody to fight, they would fight amongst themselves. And squabbling was de rigueur in Fairyland. Not even cats were as bad. It has in fact been said that elves are like cats, but cats will work together, for instance when sharing a kill, while elves squabble and fight so that a third party may go home with the food. And elves could take umbrage. They loved umbrage, and as for sulking, that was a top entertainment. But everywhere they had been, they had stirred up little pockets of trouble, being nuisances, causing damage for damage's sake, stealing sheep, cows, even the occasional dog. Only yesterday, Mustard Seed had gleefully snatched a ram from its flock on the hills and then loosed it in a small china shop, laughing as it had lowered its horns and, yes, rammed the shelves. But there was no rhyme nor reason to it. They needed to show what they could really do. Perhaps, Peaseblossom mused, the time was afoot to lead his elves on a raid that all elves would sing about for a long time to come. A smile flickered across his thin, sharp face, and he waved a hand in the air, changing his tunic instantly to one of leather and fur, a crossbow tucked into his belt. "We will put a girdle of glamour around their world," he laughed. "Go, my elves, go make your mischief. But when this still-bent moon swells to her full glory, we will go together in force. That land will be ours once more." In her father's barn, Tiffany was watching Nightshade wake up. She had mixed up a new tonic for her yesterday, a good strong dose of reciprocal greens. It looked a rather poisonous green before it was heated up, but in most cases the end certainly justified the greens, which had made the elf sleep deeply for a whole day, giving her body a chance to regain its strength. And, incidentally, giving Tiffany a chance to go round the houses without worrying about what the Fegals might do in her absence. "I might even have time to fly to Lanka and check on Geoffrey if I do it once more," she thought. She knew the Fegals would never hurt a sleeping elf, but one awake, well, their instincts might just take over if Nightshade should put a single dainty finger wrong. And, of course, she didn't trust the elf either. "Time for a walk," she said, as Nightshade stretched her limbs and looked around her as she woke. "I think it is time you saw a few more humans." For how else could she teach Nightshade about how this world worked if Nightshade mostly only saw the inside of the barn and a few ready-to-boil-over Fegals? So she took Nightshade down into the village, past the pub where the men were sitting looking glumly at their beer, fishing the occasional barrel gushy out of it, past the small shops, picking her way carefully over the debris outside Mrs. Tumble's Plates for All Seasons, down the road and back up into the downs. Tiffany had asked her dad to let people know she was trying out a girl to help mix her medicines, so nobody really looked directly at her. But Tiffany had no doubt that they would all have taken in every single detail as she passed. It was why she had insisted on Nightshade's dairymaid's dress being toned down, so there were now no bows, no ribbons, no buckles, and a decent pair of boots rather than dainty slippers. "I have been watching humans," said Nightshade as they were clumping back up the road, "and I can't understand them. I saw a woman giving an old tramp a couple of pennies. He was nothing to do with her, so why would she do that? How does it help her? I don't understand." "It's what we do," said Tiffany. "The wizards call it empathy. That means putting yourself in the place of the other person and seeing the world from their point of view. I suppose it's because
In the very olden days, when humans had to fight for themselves every day, they needed to find people who would fight with them too, and together we lived, yes, and prospered. Humans need other humans. It's as simple as that.
Yes, but what good would the old lady get from giving away her money?
Well, said Tiffany, she will probably feel what we call a little glow, because she has helped someone who needed help. It will mean that she is glad that she is not in his circumstances. You could say that she can see what his world is like, and, what can I say, she comes away feeling hopeful.
But the tramp looked as if he could do a job of some sort, to earn his own pennies, but nevertheless she gave him hers.
Nightshade was still struggling to understand the human concept of money. The elves, of course, would simply make it appear whenever they willed. It disappeared pretty quickly, too, as anyone given fairy gold soon discovered, usually by the morning, which often meant a lively evening in the pub, and an even livelier evening the following night if visiting the same establishment.
"Well, yes," said Tiffany, "that sort of thing does happen, but not always, and the old lady will still feel she has done the right thing. He may be a bit of a scamp, but she tells herself that she is a good person."
"I saw a king in your land before, Verence, and I watched him, and he didn't tell people what they should do," Nightshade continued.
"Well, he has a wife to tell him what to do," laughed Tiffany. "That's what humans are. Right up to our kings and queens, our barons and lords. Our rulers rule by consent, which means that we like having them as rulers, if they do what we want them to do. There were a lot of battles long ago, but there again everyone finally realized that it was better to work peacefully with everyone else. For one person alone cannot survive. We humans definitely need other people to keep us human."
"I notice that you don't use magic very much either," Nightshade added.
"Yet you are a witch. You are powerful."
"Well, what we witches have found is that power is best left at home. Magic is tricky anyway, and it can turn and twist and get things wrong. But if you surround yourself with other humans, you will have what we call friends, people who like you and people you like."
"Friends?" Nightshade rolled the word and the idea around in her head and then asked, "Am I your friend?"
"Yes," said Tiffany. "You could be." She looked at the people passing by and said to Nightshade, "Look, try this. There's an old woman trying to carry a very heavy basket up the hill. Go and help her, will you, and see what happens."
The elf looked horrified. "What do I say to her?"
"You say, 'Can I help you, mistress?'"
Nightshade gulped, but she crossed the road and spoke to the old woman, and Tiffany listened and heard the old woman saying, "What a kind girl you are. Thank you very much. Bless you for helping an old lady."
To Tiffany's surprise, Nightshade carried the basket not only over the hill, but also along the next stretch of the road, and she heard her ask, "How do you live, lady?"
The old lady sighed. "Little by little. My husband died years ago, but I am good with the needle, and so I make things. I don't need charity. I get along, and I still got my home. As we say, worse things happen at sea."
As Nightshade watched the woman go away, she said to Tiffany, "Can you give me some money, please?"
"Well," said Tiffany, "witches seldom have money about their person. We don't live in that kind of world."
Nightshade brightened up.
"I can help then," she said. "I'm an elf, and I am sure I could get into a place where the money is."
"Please do not try that," said Tiffany. "There would be a lot of trouble." She ignored a grumble from the side of the road.
"Nay, if you don't get caught. We is good at getting into places, ye ken," another Feagle muttered.
Very true, though getting out again was sometimes trickier, especially if there was strong drink about. Nightshade paid the Feagles no heed. She was still puzzling.
That old woman had absolutely nothing, but she was still cheerful. What did she have to be cheerful about?
"Being alive," said Tiffany.
"What you are seeing, Nightshade, is someone making the best of things, which is something else humans do. And sometimes the best of it is good."
She paused. "How did it make you feel," she asked, "carrying that basket?"
Nightshade looked puzzled. "I'm not sure," she said slowly. "But I'm not sure I felt like an elf should. Is that a good thing?"
"Look," Tiffany said,
the wizards tell us that in the very, very olden days, humans were more like monkeys. And being a monkey was a very clever thing to be, as monkeys like to see into everything. And then the monkeys realized that if one monkey tried to kill a large wolf, he would soon be a dead monkey. But if two monkeys could get together, they would be very happy monkeys, and happy monkeys create more happy monkeys, so they would have lots of monkeys, which chatter and gibber and talk all the time until, in the end, they became us. So too could an elf change. "When I get my kingdom back," Nightshade began. "Stop there," said Tiffany. "Why do you want your kingdom back? What good has it done you? Think about it, for I am the human who has looked after you, the only person you might call a friend." She looked seriously at the elf. "I have told you that we, would be happy if you were to be Queen of the Elves again, but only if you can truly learn from your time here. Be prepared to live in peace. Teach your elves that the world has changed and that there is no space for them here." There was hope in her voice now, a hope that human and elf might be able to change the stories of humans and elves. A princess doesn't have to be blonde and blue-eyed and have a shoe size smaller than her age, she thought. People can trust witches and not fear the old woman in the woods, the poor old woman whose only crime was to have no teeth and to talk to herself. And perhaps an elf could learn to know mercy, to discover humanity. "If you learn things," she finished softly, "you might find yourself building a different kind of kingdom."